Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps to build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then this show. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you back. So I have like a preface before we get into today's interview. On November 10th, 2022, the HarperCollins Union went on strike. And so they were asking for basic needs. Like they wanted more diversity, more inclusion, getting paid for their work, getting livable wages while living in New York City. So they went on strike. We were supporting them all the way through. And in February, finally, after 3 months of just being on strike, HarperCollins went back to the bargaining big table and started negotiating a contract. The contract was ratified and was voted, and it's all gone through as of last week, as of February 20-something. So February 21st, the HarperCollins Union started to go back to work. So thanks to that, thanks to the strike is over, I can now release this episode. This episode was reported in November, and I really love, it's one of those titles that I really loved reading. I love Olivia Day. Olivia Day has been a friend of the show. She has come to the show for every release from the series, and then she will continue to come back to the show over and over because I love chatting with her. So I hope you enjoyed this interview. I understand like you might hear some Christmas stuff, you know, just think about it, remember the time, but I hope you enjoyed the interview. Now let's get to the show. Hi, Olivia. Welcome to What's Your Next Podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
So happy to have you here. So tell us what you've been up to.
In this past year or so?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, on a personal level, I moved to a new apartment. So we're still in the midst of, the unpacking is mostly done, but yeah. We're doing things like putting down rugs. And last night we put up 3 sets of curtains with more to go, which just makes an enormous difference, yeah. You know, in how a space feels, whether it feels yeah. like home and feels comfortable. So we're still sort of settling in, but it's lovely so far. I had, you know, traveled a couple times. I had a book come out this last month on November 15th. I had Shipwrecked come out. And so that was, and I know we're going to chat about that today. So that was lovely. And I wrote my next book, which is the first in a new series. And so I wrote that this year too. And I really love how it came out. So I'm really excited about that too.
Oh my gosh, you gave me great news that there's going to be another book next year. Like maybe next year or in a couple of years, there's another book coming out. So I guess. Yes. So very exciting thing. So so let's talk about Shipwreck. And Shipwreck is book 3 in the spoiler alert series. It's the third book, but it's sort of like it's its own standalone in this world. Talk to us about this world and what Shipwreck is all about.
Right. So as sort of once we talk about it, it'll become clear sort of why Maria and Peter, who are the main characters, they're sort of separated from the rest of the cast in large part. So the other couples from the first 2 books do show up occasionally on the margins and so forth. And I try to have little references in there for people who have read and, you know, read the first couple of books and little Easter eggs and things like that. But but it is largely, I think it works pretty well as a standalone. So the idea is that we're actually going sort of back in time to the casting for the first season of Gods of the Gates, our blockbuster fantasy television show that, as I always say, is not Game of Thrones, but is not Game of Thrones. And Maria is a Swedish actor who is in town for doing sort of final auditions for the role. She's about to have chemistry tests with a few other actors for their final, you know, for the final decisions on who's going to get the role that she's trying for. And she meets, the night before her audition, meets a thick-thighed Viking of a man named Peter. And as far as she is concerned, first of all, she thinks he's incredibly hot. But also she feels like there's really no future with him, no possible future with him, because if she gets the role, her character is going to be marooned, shipwrecked on a desolate Irish island for years at a time. Mm-hmm. And if she doesn't get the role, she's going to be back in Sweden. So she basically hooks up with Peter and then, again, figuring she will never see him again, leaves without a word the next morning, and which Peter does not love when he wakes up to discover, because he really liked her. His feelings are a little bit hurt. And of course, because this is a romance novel, she shows up to her audition the next morning, and the actor she's going to be doing final chemistry auditions playing against is, of course, Peter. And they are cast as the only two actors, basically shipwrecked. They're Vikings in the story, shipwrecked on this Irish island. Mm-hmm. And they end up filming on that Irish island, just them and a very small crew, for 6 years. So this is their story over the course of when they first meet and hook up. Yeah. Literally, we start with the hookup.
and we experience the 6 years, from intimacy coordinators to casting crew, you know, stuff, and showrunners telling them what to do, and Maria standing up like, no, I'm not doing that.
Maria, are you okay with faulty language?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, Maria gives zero fucks what next showrunners think of her. She cares about doing her job well.
Yeah.
She cares about her role. She cares about her colleagues. She does not care what two little cretins, Ron and Archie, showrunners may personally think about her. And she's not, she has vulnerabilities, but her vulnerabilities have nothing to do with what the showrunners sort of are poking at. Yeah. Like, they try to sort of make her question maybe her talent, her body, her appearance. And Maria's vulnerabilities are none of those areas. So it does not hurt her feelings at all. She just, you know, basically she tries her best to just work around them however she can. I loved writing her, because she is the most confident, I think, female main character I've ever written.
Yeah.
And I wanted that, because I want people, you know, it's important for me to have obviously different personalities. I don't want to tell the same story again and again, but also that for my, particularly my fat characters, have different relationships with their bodies. Some maybe slightly more insecure, more body neutral. And then there's Maria, who's like, yeah, I'm hot.
I love Maria when she comes in. She's like, I came with 3 bags of candy. And then like Peter was like, why do you have 3 bags of candy? Three luggage of candy. And he was like, why do you have this? And she's like, you know, I'm gonna have it. And then like a few points later, it's like, oh, they want to lose weight. She's like, yeah, I don't want them to restrict my diet. You know, like, it's like, I knew this was coming, and no, we're not doing this.
Right, because if you follow the series, you know that Ron and RJ are not exactly like broad-minded, like kindly individuals. And so she from the beginning is like, because Peter's also fat and hot too.
Yeah.
So she looks at her character, Cassian, his Cyprian, and she says, these roles were not specified as, these characters were not specified as fat in the books that the series was based on. So why would Ron and RJ, who are not exactly exemplars of body positivity, why would they cast two fat actors in the roles for these characters? Like, just because they really care about, like, bad representation? No. And so she has figured, they're stranding us on a deserted island.
Yeah.
At some point, they're going to ask us to starve, like to lose weight. And we sort of find out, she doesn't articulate that clearly until later.
Yeah.
But you can see if you read back that she's doing stuff to prepare for this the whole time. Yeah. She's bringing extra food with her. She is going on, she's having magazine articles and going on shows to talk about isn't it amazing that Aran and RJ care so much about that representation and body positivity, so that everyone's like, oh yeah, that's great. So they're getting all this good publicity from her. And then she tells them, look, if you're going to tell me to starve, like, how's that going to make you look? And so she is set up from years before to put herself in a position where it's going to be very, months before, where it's going to be very hard for them to have any leverage over her.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, they don't really have the ultimate leverage over her, even if she had not, because she's willing to walk away.
Yeah. She was
unlike Peter. She is willing to walk away.
Yeah. She was smart. Like, she's a smart cookie. She was like, no, we're going to do this. We're going to do this my way. And it is okay. You know, and the fact that she was willing to walk away, because Peter was like, no, you know, this is important for me. Peter has been the regular working actor who's been struggling and then realized, like, I got this big break. I don't want to lose it. I don't want to lose hold on it. I'll do what I can. And Maria's like, no, there's more opportunity. Like, in some ways, Maria was like the abundance mindset of like, there's more opportunities out here. You know, this is not right. The deal. And so allows you to take more risk.
Right. And I mean, fundamentally, Peter is a lonelier person. He does not have a circle of, you know, family, loving family, a large circle of loving friends to give him a sense of self-worth outside of work.
Yeah.
You know, for reasons of his past, but also just sort of his personality. There's not a lot else in his life other than work at this point when you start the book. And part of the journey for him, and that's why, you know, he's going to hold on to this role with everything he has, because again, it is the basis of sort of his sense of self and his sense of sort of accomplishment and self-worth, while Maria's is much more based in the people she loves surrounding her. Mm-hmm. And it's easier when she's Swedish and there is more of a social safety net too, mm-hmm. where like your health insurance is not dependent on your work. You have health insurance because you live there and pay taxes. And that's different from someone who, there are things you have to worry about as an American, as Peter is, that you don't have to worry about as a Swede. So there's cultural differences as well, but also personality differences. But part of Peter's journey in the book is to broaden his life, to make his life much more full and rich, so that he has people around him who do love him and that he loves and who can give him that sense of self-worth and a sense of who he is as a person and what he cares about other than simply work.
Yeah. And so we got to talk about Sweden and America. You mentioned, you gave us a taster, but we have a Swedish character and we have an American character, and you live in Sweden, you know, but you're an American. So how is it infusing this culture you've been living for the past few years into this book? You know,
I thought that it was a lot of fun for me because there, as my editor was reading my manuscript that I turned in, like there were a few sections where I was talking about various Swedish things that Peter's like stymied by. It's like, why is this? My editor's like, yeah, this isn't personal at all, Olivia. She could tell that this is coming from me. And I wrote most of the scenes set in Sweden. Mm-hmm. I wrote from, you know, there aren't that many, there's like a couple chapters. I wrote them mostly from Peter's point of view, mm-hmm. because that's the point of view that I could relate to most heavily, because mm-hmm. as an American coming to Sweden, that mm-hmm. made more sense to me. Plus, it's more entertaining because those chapters were a lot of fun to write, particularly with Maria's parents completely screwing with him in those chapters. And just sort of the observations he would make as an American, it allowed me to sort of use my own experiences as an American coming to Sweden.
And so what it was like to close out the gods, you know, this world, you know, after three mm-hmm. books, because there are three long books and there are complicated books to write. Like, what was the process of like wrapping this chapter up, this series?
Well, I made sure that the epilogue sort of tried to tie off a lot, the loose, you know, most of the loose threads for the series, because I knew that my publisher wanted me to start a new series next, so that other than the bonus story I'm writing for Kara and Summer, which mm-hmm. is the pre-order bonus, which I'm just about done writing, so that should go out, even though the book is already out. But I was told that the pre-order, but it's still a pre-order bonus because you're still going to get it like months before anyone else will ever see it. But other than that, I knew it was the end of the series. And so I wanted to end in the epilogue in a way that felt satisfying, not just for Marie and Peter's story, but for the whole sort of cast that we've been following the whole time. So, you know, there's, and I always wanted to have a final scene with all of them watching the train wreck that was the like finale of this, you know, Gods of the Gates, the finale all together, like watching this train wreck and just like ripping the show. You're like, what?
Yes, I love this. All right. So can you give us a teaser of what can we expect in the next book series? It doesn't have to be anything, you know, specific, just broad strokes.
Happy to talk about.
Yeah.
So it is not, you know, not set in Hollywood or anything. It's set in a fictional southeastern Maryland town on the water called Harlot's Bay, which was settled by some runaway rebellious women and has continued to be a place where people who sort of burn down their lives, especially women, move to sort of start their lives over. And the basic premise, right now the title is At First Spite, and the basic premise is female main character is Athena. She's engaged to be married to a pediatrician, and a month before the wedding, based on basically the say-so of his older brother who disapproves, he calls off the wedding, which is, I mean, on a personal level, not great, but mm-hmm. it's worse because she had lived in a separate state. She'd actually left her teaching job because they were going to get married in the late summer. She'd left at the end of school year. She doesn't have a job anymore. She'd, you know, given away her condo. She sold her furniture because she was going to be moving in with him. And all of her savings she'd essentially used to buy him his wedding gift, which is he lives in a set of row homes. Mm-hmm. And then the one attached to his is what's called a spite house. I don't know if you know anything about spite houses.
Yeah.
There's one in Boston. So if you look up Boston spite house, that was sort of what I based my spite house on. It's a 10-foot wide house that was built specifically because, well, in the case of the Boston spite house, the story is that, and it's unclear whether it's true or not, but the story is the two brothers were given a plot of land at the end mm-hmm. of the set of row homes. And one of the brothers went off to fight the Confederacy mm-hmm. and the other one stayed there. And while the brother was gone, he built his row home over 75% of the land. And his brother came back and had like just this 10-foot wide plot left with, which, you know, too small to build on. Unless you're incredibly pissed because your brother took 75% of the land while you were off fighting a war. So the story is that he came back and there is a 10-foot wide house tacked onto the end of this other house, which deprives the other house of most of its light, airflow, like the entry can't be on the side anymore. It basically, it's built out of spite because... right, to get back. And so basically Johnny lives in the larger one, her ex-fiance. She has bought the smaller one because he wants to go through and rip out walls and have that whole space, mm-hmm. right? And she gave it to him as a wedding gift, but of course they're not getting married and she has nowhere to go except this 10-foot wide house, which is on the other side of the wall from her ex-fiance. And a narrow alleyway, 4-foot alleyway across from his older brother, the person who convinced her fiance to leave her. And the story is her and the older brother.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
So, and you sort of, it said the one who, yeah, the older brother who sort of stick up his butt, like very sort of responsible, serious, rigid older brother who had convinced his younger brother not to marry her, who's across a narrow alleyway from her. And she does she does her best to make him regret it's just what he's done. All while, of course, you know, kind of falling in love with him. And it's awkward. It's awkward because, you know, even if he can make her forgive him, you know, even if she, you know, if they sort of get over that, he convinced his brother not to marry her. So if he were to end up with her, probably not going to go over so well with his brother. So yeah, there's a lot of inherent conflict, and it was a lot of fun to write. Yeah. Athena is by far my messiest female main character.
Ooh.
She is sad. I mean, she's very funny, very smart, very funny, very curious, but she is sad. She's angry, very angry, and also depressed, and not depressed in the sense of temporarily sad, but like depressed. And does not consciously sort of acknowledge that until sort of a certain point in the book. And that's sort of part of one of the turning points in the book is that. So I really love it. I love both characters. You kind of can see why Matthew did what he did, the older brother. I love Athena, and I really am happy with how the book came out. So I'm excited for people eventually to read it.
Gosh, I am excited to read this. You have me at a spite house. Like, I'm like, oh, it's the best revenge you can have. Like, bam, I'm going to be there, you know? So exciting. All right, so switching gears, let's talk about some book recommendations. Do you have any books recommend our listeners to pick up?
Okay, so now, because I've been so busy, I've been doing more rereading than reading new stuff, because I find that very comforting and find very busy. So a book recommendation I have that is a reread. One of my favorite authors in the world is Jeannie Lin, who writes historical romances set in the Tang Dynasty. And, you know, I mean, just as, this is a broader thing. Is that, you know, there are in romance, you occasionally have authors who are like, I'm the first person to do this. And then, frankly, in most cases, that is not true. Usually you can find there are very few things that have never been done before. Right. I am not the first person to write a plus size hero. I am not the first person, you know, we're treading on ground that has been trod on by other people almost always. Jeannie Lin did something no one else had ever done before. She wrote for her Harlequin historicals, and she was literally the first to have, like, you know, Tang Dynasty as it, when, you know, Harlequin historicals was all, well, I mean, frankly, white people, but also, I mean, but, you know, set in Scotland, England, maybe America, maybe Scandinavia, like Vikings or whatever, medieval times, but not Tang Dynasty China. And she is, so she is the first, and again, there aren't that many of those in the world, but even the amazing part is she's not only the first, she's also an incredible writer, like a beautiful writer. Just, you don't have to be familiar, I was not, with Tang China, Tang Dynasty China, to appreciate her books. They are beautifully written, they are witty, they're thoughtful. And the collection that I recently reread was a collection that Harlequin Historical put out called Silk, Swords, and Surrender. It has five of her novellas. She writes really good novellas too. So, like, it's a good way to sort of dip a toe in her writing and in the world that she is talking about in these novellas, which tend to be, you know, they're faster, shorter stories. I think that they're excellent. I love novellas, particularly, you know, if you don't have a ton of time. And it's just wonderful. She's amazing. She is, I think, like, you know, probably my, definitely my top five of romance authors, like, who I just think is amazing. So
I'm adding, you have me in novellas, but I'm adding her. I've heard of her multiple times and it's been on my TBR, but I'm bumping it up because you're like, novellas. Like,
I mean, this collection has five of them, but you know, you could just get one of the little individual ones, but they're all really good. So
love it. Olivia, tell us where you can find you online.
So I am, my website is oliviadade.com, oliviadade.com. My newsletter is a good place to find me. There's links to that on my website. And I am on Twitter. That is really my only social media home. where I'm active, which is unfortunate. There's a lot happening with Twitter right now. But on Twitter, I am at Olivia Writes. So OliviaWrites. I did make accounts at Mastodon and Hive, but I'm so tired, Laura.
I tried Hive, but Hive doesn't allow me to put pictures because I have a Pixel. It's still like, it's such a brand new, like Hive is just, it's a baby app. And I don't think they expected the amount of people that were going to
transfer. Privacy issues too, like information privacy issues. You can't reserve a, like anyone else could reserve the same name. I'm at Olivia Dade, but that's not reserved for me. Other people can put at Olivia Dade.
Yeah.
So there are issues. Mastodon has other issues.
Yeah.
The link to my Mastodon account is on my Twitter profile. So if you want to find me there, you can do that too. So that's where I am. So right now, yes, if Twitter like goes defunct, then we'll see where I end up, but definitely my newsletter, my website are always there.
And you know what? At the end of the day, we own the website. You own your newsletter. It's the easiest way. Like nobody's taking that away from you, and nobody's taking that relationship with, you know, your readers are taking that relationship with you. So it's okay. Yeah. Like social media is a rented space. And as we learn, sometimes it just goes to dumpster fire, you know.
I am curious to see whether Tumblr can make a comeback now that with Twitter's like problems, and then Tumblr now allowing adult content again, which is the reason Tumblr like died in the first place, because they disallowed adult content, and then everyone's like,
no content.
See ya, I'm off somewhere else now.
So maybe Tumblr will make a comeback, honestly. Like,
I love that they were like really taking advantage of it. They're like, so you're leaving Twitter. We have sexy times again. Come to us.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Olivia, for being on the show.
Well, I am delighted to chat with you again. I had a very lovely time. And, you know, I hope that for everyone listening, I hope you have a wonderful holiday season and that all is well in your corner of the world. And I hope the same is true for you too, Laura.
Thank you. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other romance recommendations, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Did you know you can purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore? With Libro.fm, you can pick up more than 250,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from real booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company, you know the name, but you'll be part of a different story, one that supports your local community. If you're new to audiobooks, there's a perfect way to squeeze into more reading to your busy life. Listen with a free Libro.fm app while you do your chores, walk your dog, relax at home. The Watch Read Next podcast has a special offer for our listeners. Get two audiobooks on Libro FM for the price of one with your first month of membership. Use code WATCHREADNEXT. This offer is only valid for new members in Canada and the US. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? Watch Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.